Why work harder when you can work smarter? I mean, we're all looking for ways to make work and life just a little bit easier. Enter the Ford F-150 truck. It helps you get the job done in the smartest way possible. Have you seen the Pro Access tailgate? It improves access to the bed and cargo, which makes it easier to load in tight spaces. Think about the time and hassle you'll save with that feature alone. And I haven't even mentioned the mobile power source, Pro Power On Board. You can power up to 7.2 kilowatts outside your F-150. You're already thinking about all the ways you can put that to use, aren't you? See, I told you, smarter. Tough this smart can only be called F-150. Find your local Ford dealer at Ford.com. Pro Access tailgate available starting spring 2024. See owner's manual for important operating instructions. This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll, and we're all about the rock and roll today, starting with our favorite rock and roll Hall of Famer, Duff McKagan, and the patented Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you. Hey, listen, I know it's a little private, but I just bought a toilet brush. Yeah, to cut a long story short, I'm going back to paper. Thank you very much.
Oh, that was ridiculous. Oh, thanks to Duff for delivering the laughs every single Friday. That one got me. Always nice to start the weekend with a laugh. And like I said, Talk is Jericho is all about the rock today. It's the return of the classic album Clash. And this time we're dissecting and debating The Police. We got their very first album, Outlandish to More, versus the last studio record they released, Synchronicity. Taking part in the discussion, I got Anthrax drummer Charlie Benanti, who's participated in a few classic album clashes in the past, including one about his own band, Anthrax. I got Paul Gargano, a longtime industry vet who's also a huge Police fan. And I got Ribo from the Winnipeggers talking some great stories about the crazy relationship between Sting and Stuart Copeland. He is, of course, a Talk is Jericho alumni, and all the trials and tribulations they went through, fist fights, name calling, all sorts of crazy stuff. Plus, we'll do the usual track by track, talk about the cover art for both albums, songwriting, touring, how such a prolific and influential band managed to become so with just 5 albums under their collective belt. We talk about the Police's influence on Rush and vice versa, another legendary Hall of Fame trio, of course, and the Beatles' influence on the Police. Now, there is a clear winner at the end of this debate, but it might actually surprise you which album comes out on top when all is said and done. Let's get to it. It's the classic album class featuring the Police's Outlandish to More versus Synchronicity, and it starts now on Talk is Jericho. Playing the part of a modern-day Charles Manson, here is Paul Gargano. But we're just going to hop right into this. We got Paul Gargano and Charlie Benanti and Ribo, Ryan Ahoff. All of us huge Police fans from different places. Oh, Charlie's got his notes. He's prepared.
Oh.
But we were just saying, Paul, obviously we're doing the Police classic album clash, is that the Police was such a huge band, but to find people that are super knowledgeable and almost Police fanatics, it's harder and harder because that was almost 40 years ago that they were a band.
Yeah. They weren't active for the longest time either, which is crazy. I mean, you have all these bands. We get really accustomed to bands that just keep churning out material over and over again. And the Police put out, what, like 5 records? I mean, they're one of the biggest bands in history, and they don't have that body of content that everybody else has, which you would think would make it easier for people to dive into them, because it's not like this, holy, where do I start? Like the Rolling Stones. Right. Where do you start with the Rolling Stones? The Police, it's really easy. You have 5 records. Dive in.
I was trying to think of another band that has that much influence, that has that little amount of material, and I thought of two other ones. You guys can jump in if you think of those. One of them is Guns N' Roses. Basically, 3 albums, 4 if you count Chinese Democracy. And the other one is the Sex Pistols. One album. Right?
With B-sides and other little things.
Yeah, a couple extras here, but basically it's Nevermind the Bollocks. So you've got like Police, Rock and Roll Hall of Famers, Sex Pistols, Rock and Roll Hall of Famers, Guns N' Roses, but add them together, and like you said, it's less albums than freaking, you know, the Beatles put out in 3 years.
But what about Boston?
Yeah, that's a good one. Albums,
right? I mean, they're not. I don't know the influence, but man, they. I mean, they defined classic rock for a long time. You know, are they as artsy as the Police and everything else? Maybe not, but man, they had three records
that we know. But then there was a fourth one. Walk On was in there.
Third Stage is the third one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Third Stage was third. That was with Amanda, right?
Yeah. Then there was Walk On.
Yeah. There's not. Okay. What's the other one?
There's like Corporate America. There's one that no one knows, right?
Yep.
So there is like technically five, but three that everyone knows.
But
so,
is it Boston? It's not like those, the first two records, that band. It's different, right?
Yeah. Brad, it just became
on the third album. The singer.
Yeah, it became like Megadeth, like Tom Scholz and whoever he had playing with him at the time, you know?
Boston became Maine. They just...
God. were not those Boston albums, were they? They were kind of spread out over a longer period of time, weren't they? They're like 10 years apart or something as well.
Right.
The joke was every other president.
Yeah, I think it was 76, 78, and like 86 or something along those lines. But we're talking about the Police. We've been waiting to do this for a long time. And are always our classic album, Clash, and Charlie's done a few of them. Where is the first time you ever heard about the Police, and when did you kind of feel a relationship to them? And you can start, Charlie.
I heard Roxanne on the radio station in Long Island, I believe. And WNEW in New York was another one. On Sundays, they would play Things from England. It was a radio show. And heard Roxanne and completely grabbed me. It was just like everything about that song was just awesome. You know, the hook, the drumming, the kind of reggae chords, you know, that feel. It was awesome. I was hooked right away.
I remember Billy Joel saying that when he first heard that, he was convinced that Sting was black. He said, there's no way a white guy could sing like that.
He's very white.
He's the whitest of the white.
Exactly. He's the whitest of the white. He's even whiter than Billy Joel.
How about you, Rye? Was the first time that you remember hearing the Police?
I had the Message in a Bottle 45 that I used to play. So that was kind of the first record I had by the Police. And that was the only song I really knew other than the B-side, which was Landlord. On the opposite side of that, which is a real ripper. I love that song too. But that's quite a difference there. But that Message in a Bottle, I think I've probably heard more than any other song in history. Like I've heard it so many times and I'm still not sick of that song. Like other songs I'm sick of, but for some reason that comes on the radio or I'm in a supermarket and it comes on, I still like it. There's just so many great things about that song. It's so original and the drumming's amazing and everything about it is very cool.
How about you, Paul?
I want to go to shop at the supermarkets you shop at. If you hear the Police in this grocery store, get the Police in our grocery stores here. But my first was Zenyatta Mandata was my introduction. It would have been Don't Stand So Close to Me. It was one of the first cassettes I bought with my own money. And that was, Zenyatta. It's strange because I have like obviously the metal background, but I got into pop music first because I didn't have older brothers and I was still am a complete nerd. So it wasn't like I was hanging out with the older kids. I literally was discovering music on my own on the radio and my mom, it was what stations she had on in the house. So it was like, I fell into Police, Duran Duran, Culture Club, all that stuff before I moved into the metal world. So it was interesting. Like this is my sweet spot when it comes to music.
Well, that music was everywhere too. Like they would play it on the radio. You would see kind of the early kind of rock videos. You would see, I remember, cause for me, it was like you said, Zenyatta Mandata, which I think is 1980. So I'm like 9 years old. And I remember like, Don't Stand So Close to Me. They're all like dancing around. It's kind of like a, like a modern day Beatles, where they're just, oh, they're having so much fun and they're all blonde. And so I went to the store to try and find do 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 da 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 on, by the way, which when I had Angus Young on Talk Is Jericho, he was like, what do the lyrics even mean? It's like, do 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 da 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 da. What does that mean? I'm like, nothing like a 40-year-old reference, Angus.
But he just heard that.
Exactly. Exactly. He just discovered that.
So I went to the store, like Target or whatever, like kind of a Walmart, to find it, and it was all sold out. So I was like, well, I'll buy this other Police song, which was Can't Stand Losing You, backed up with Be My Girl Sally. So those were the first two Police songs that I ever owned. And Ryba, when you say you've heard Message, I heard Be My Girl Sally just as much, because, and we'll talk about it, it's very like, you know my name, look up the number by the Beatles. It's so weird, but if you're a Beatles fan, you're like, this is actually really cool. So Can't Stand Losing You was like my song. I think it was in grade 5 or 6, and that was kind of like what I listened to. You listen to it and you turn it over and listen to it again. It's every 4 minutes you're turning the damn thing over.
I was gonna say, talking about like liking pop music, because I kind of came from the pop, you know, same with Paul, I came from the pop world, and then I got into metal. And Police, for some reason, was a kind of a crossover band.
Right.
You know, they rocked a lot harder than and differently than other pop bands at the time, you know, like Corey Hart or something. They had something to them that was the metal fans and us could grab onto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost kind of like I mentioned the Beatles before, but there is that element of Beatles where they have the reggae, they have the ska, they have the super syrupy pop melodies and the ballads, but there is a metal side to them, whether you're talking about, you know, Synchronicity 2 or even Synchronicity 1. I mean, those are pretty heavy tunes. So they always had that kind of a heavier, darker sound to them. Do you agree with that, Charlie?
I do, but I don't know which one of them brought it. Did Andy bring it or did Stewart bring it? I don't think Sting brought it.
Right, right. Or maybe he pulled a McCartney and just said, you know, I want to try something really dark and dirty. The other connection I have to the Police is that the Police was the first concert I ever went to in August. Wow. Yeah. August of 1983. I had a couple older friends that I hung out with, and my mom let me go to the concert with them. And the first band I ever saw live was the Thompson Twins, because they opened for the Police.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, man. I didn't get to see the Police until the reunion. So that was,
wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't get to see them until that.
Did you ever see them live, Charlie?
I never saw them.
So you never saw them in the early days. Yeah.
We were going to go see them at Shea Stadium, 83, but we didn't go. And then the reunion happened, and I didn't feel like paying $500 to go see the Police. I thought that was a crime to pay that much to see the Police.
Chris, you'll appreciate this. I was actually in Seattle doing something with Queensryche. I was doing like the last recorded interview with Chris and Jeff DeGarmo and Tate, and the Police reunion was there that night. It was one of the first nights of the tour, and I was like, oh, I'm going. And I literally went down and bought a Scalps ticket. I bought a Scalps ticket by myself and went, and so I was losing my mind. I was like texting my wife through the whole thing, going, oh my God, awesome. It's the police.
Well, it was funny because Ribo and Charlie and I were talking beforehand about the reunion. And remember my wise cousin, Chad, he joined the Police fan club at that time. Remember that, right? You're supposed to get like cheaper tickets or something. And all it ended up costing was like $27.99 a month. Like 6 months, didn't get anything for it.
Nice. Oh, did he get like an identification card that said he was a member of the police army?
Yeah. Decoder ring. Oh, man.
Drink your Ovaltine.
But like we said, the band of this influence of such a short period of time, but you know, two of the records that they did, I thought it would be cool to do kind of their first record, Outlandish D'Amour, and then their last record, Synchronicity, even though it was only 5 years apart. So, which once again, to see the development of this band, it's almost like a mini Beatles in that they just did so much in such a short period of time.
Definitely.
The Beatles comparison, did you bring it up earlier? Because that was the one thing, especially going back and like Outlandish in particular, like there's just so much, you hear the Beatles in there. You really do. I mean, it comes through. I became a Beatles fan later in life. I didn't grow up on the Beatles, but it's just crazy because you notice their influence in so many places. And I mean, there's Police songs that you would think could be Beatles songs. Like if the Beatles were writing an album at that point, it could be a Police song.
I totally agree with that.
That makes sense. Oh,
absolutely. There's also a real kind of dichotomy between the two bands in that what was their genius was also their demise. And that was kind of the relationship between Stuart Copeland and Sting, similar to John Lennon and Paul McCartney.
Mm-hmm.
In that Stuart brings Sting into his band, John brings Paul into his band, and then slowly loses control as the guy that he brings in takes over the whole show. And I think that caused a lot of animosity between Stuart and Sting, and that's why they broke up so quickly.
Yeah.
It's the struggle.
Right. Definitely. I mean,
it's a struggle. Charlie just summed up the music industry in three words. It's a struggle.
Would you say, Rye?
But like you said, like that's partially what makes great music is that there was that someone there that could, like in the case of the Beatles, like John could say to Paul, no, that's a little too fluffy. Let's get some grit here. You know, where Stuart right. could say, hey, Sting, you know, that's a little too lovey dovey. Let's put some fight into it and make it a little bit more energetic and stuff. And they literally did fight each other to the point where Stuart broke Sting's rib right before a gig and he played the whole show with a broken rib. That's pretty intense.
Yeah, they would go at it, man. I was like shocked to find out all that stuff. And Stuart would write on his drum heads, you know.
And cunt.
It's funny you said that, but if the Beatles would have stayed on tour, they may have broken up earlier. Because maybe if the Police didn't tour all the time, maybe they wouldn't have got on each other's nerves and maybe they spread out a bit more.
I would also say that might be one of the reasons why McCartney could see the writing on the wall and said, let's get off the road so we don't, kill each other, right? And like Charlie just said too, Sting would write, or Stuart would write phrases on his snare drum. I believe one of them was, what was one of them, Ribo?
Phrases. Off, you cunt, was one.
And so every time he hit it, because Stuart was on Talk as Jericho too, and said every time I hit it, I was taking out my aggressions on Stingo.
He'd also set up his cymbals like to the side. He started setting them up to the horizontal,
his right,
or vertical, so that he wouldn't have to look at Sting the whole show.
Yeah, I remember that on the Synchronicity tour, because like I said, you're talking from the mind of a 12-year-old, but I literally remember the whole stage was bathed in yellow, blue, and red, like the Synchronicity album cover. And whichever one was which, Sting was all red, Andy was all blue, Stuart was all yellow, and they stayed in their areas. So they might have moved around a lot, but I think, if Sting was in his area, Stuart could kind of blockade himself away from that. All right, you guys know that I travel every week for AEW, and I'm on the road for Fozzy as well. But I don't worry about appliances or any of the stuff at my house breaking down while I'm gone, because we've got American Home Shield. And truthfully, I'm not a fix-it-myself guy anyway, so even if I was home and we had a leaky faucet or a faulty water heater, I'm not the one who's going to fix it. And unexpected breakdowns like that won't break your bank with American Home Shield warranty, because covered repairs and replacements are taken care of just like that. You just choose a plan that works for you and your budget, and then when a covered item in your home breaks, contact American Home Shield, and their trusted and qualified pros will fix or replace it based on the coverage in your agreement. Right now, you can get 20% off. Just go to ahs.com/Jericho and save that 20%. That's ahs.com/Jericho for 20% off any plan. American Home Shield, don't worry, be warranty. See ahs.com/contracts. For coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty which may be provided by the home or building manufacturer. So the two records that we're talking about once again is Outlandish D'Amour, which apparently is something that Miles Copeland, who was the manager of the Police and Stuart's brother, came up with. He was going to call the record Police Brutality. But then he heard Roxanne and said, this is way more than just this punk new wave stuff. And so he came up with Outlandos Demor, which is a combination of outlaw and commando of love. So it's the outlaws of love or the commandos of love, whichever side of the coin you you think about. And that was released November 2nd, 1978. And Synchronicity came out June 17th, 1983. So not even 5 years later. So as we do on the Classic Album Clash, we always talk about the covers first. And the first cover obviously was a little bit more basic of just the band kind of just hanging out, as we can see as I look. And of course, Synchronicity has the amazing color scheme and all that sort of stuff. Which cover do you appreciate more, Charlie?
The first one.
Really? Why is that?
I just love the, they're all just so kind of young, except for Andy, but they all look very young, and they just have that look on their face like, you know, here we are, and just like, we don't know what to expect, you know, their eyes are just, you know. But there was always some weird mystique about Sting, though, back then.
Mm-hmm.
Why was his name Sting? Why did he wear that jumpsuit? You know? I was wondering about those things. And the one thing I'll say about it, because I used to like listen to certain Bob Marley songs, even when I was, you know, when I would hear them. And I always felt Sting had a lot of that Bob Marley quality. The way he would phrase yes. things was very, you know, reggae. And it was different. And, you know, because of the Police, I started to hear like the Selector and the Specials and the Beat and all that type of stuff. And then, you know, Joe Jackson, all that music, Nick Lowe, Elvis Costello, started to appreciate all that stuff coming from England. But that cover kind of, I don't know, just kind of symbolized that first record, just kind of like these three guys. You don't know if they were punk rock or what, you know?
Yeah, even by their sound, you didn't know which one it is. Ryan, which cover do you like better?
I'd probably say the Synchronicity.
Mm-hmm.
I like the color scheme. Apparently, they released like 63 different versions of the album cover.
Yeah.
All around and just different. I don't know why they did that, but it seems like kind of a weird thing to do.
Was it different pictures or different colors or what?
I think there's some different pictures. The color scheme was a little bit changed around.
They basically everything shifted across all of the strips.
Oh, I see.
So all this, and I was going to bring this up, so I'll just jump in with Ribo here. Like it was crazy. I'm a vinyl junkie. Like I've got like almost 2,000 records on vinyl, and I'm obsessed with like variations and stuff. And this one is one that mystifies me. Oh, nice. Very nice. Synchronicity is one of my favorite records of all time. And the cover amazes me because I don't understand the logic behind the variations that they put out. Like, and it's virtually impossible to collect them all. I mean, it's just to find them all. It's crazy. I mean, I don't understand why they did it. And I was hoping somebody on the call today would know why they did it and be able to fill me in. But it's crazy. There's all those different variations of the cover. It's insane.
That's what I was hoping too, Paul. And you got both so far.
How many are there?
It's literally, I want to say he's right. There's like somewhere of like, there's dozens. It's like, I mean, I think you said like 61 or 63 or something.
Yeah,
there's a ton of different covers out there. And they're just slight differences. They're differences in, you know, in the film strips. It's crazy.
I like, and I got to agree that I appreciate the album cover of Synchronicity, because I like the fact that they use the color scheme as part of the live show. And that to me was the genius of it. And I'm actually reading about right now, the album's original cover artwork designed by Norman Moore was available in 36 different variations.
63, we're dyslexic.
And it says different arrangements of the color stripes and showing different photographs of the band members taken by Dwayne Michaels. The most common version is Sting reading a copy of Young's Synchronicity, of course.
Yeah. Yep.
But even looking at it right here, they got some, one of them is yellow, blue, red. The other one is red, blue, yellow. So they really, and probably the reason for it is just to try and sell as many copies to collectors as they can. I'm sure there's somebody out there that has all 36 or is trying to get them.
It'll be like collecting all the different variations of the Led Zeppelin in through the outdoor, like, except there's 36 of them. But yeah, it'll be something I dive into at some point. But it's crazy. It's
You're a collector, Charlie. I'm surprised you haven't delved into that.
I wasn't a big police collector. Like, if it was the Beatles or Zeppelin, I probably have it.
Just one more thing, like, for me, and I prefer Synchronicity, but I kind of feel like the two covers speak to the development of the bands too, because it was a very punk, that first one was a punk cover, you know, that was very the three guys, you know, you looked at them visually, you saw who the band was, the short haircuts, it kind of spoke to what their music was, and Synchronicity, it was a simple cover, and I think the music was a lot simpler on that record, even though it wasn't simple music. Synchronicity was more complex. I kind of consider Synchronicity kind of the Police's version of The Wall a little bit, and for me at least, and I think the album cover depicted that, which is part of the reason why I like that. I mean, there's separation and isolation within the album cover on Synchronicity that I appreciate more over time, as I appreciate Synchronicity more over time. Well, so,
but you know, the other thing about it is the first album, it started the theme, because the second album had the three of them on the cover, in, you know, in a certain look. The third one, they're on the cover again, and then Ghost of the Machine completely wiped them off.
Completely.
So here's the return of the three of them back on the cover.
But not necessarily, though, because people say that the Ghost of the Machine is a digital representation of each guy on the cover. Have you ever heard that before?
Never heard that.
All right, Rival, you've heard this one.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah. That's the three guys there. You can sort of see their shaggy hairdos and everything.
Show Jerry now.
It had to be pointed out to me, though, for sure.
I have a tattoo of that because of that reason. But let me pull it up and show it to you guys. So when you see the cover, right? And this is something like when you turn Dio upside down, it spells devil. You never notice it until someone pulls it up.
Until they point it out. Then you're obsessed with it.
So look, I can't zoom in on it, but you can see the three faces. And look, you can see to the left.
Oh, wow.
A mouth, a nose, and an eye. And that's kind of like Andy's hair, because it's normal. Right next to him, nose, mouth, eye, Sting's spiky hair. And then another one of nose, mouth, eye, and Stewart's kind of swept bangs hair. You see that, Charlie?
I see it, but I'm not buying it. Okay.
Charlie's like, that's fake news. Fake news.
One last thing I'll say about the cover as well is that about Outlandos is that it's a punk cover, but it's also a new wave cover. And that's kind of what this band was at that point in time. They were a little bit punky, but they're far more kind of that, like you said, Charlie, like the Specials and Susie and the Banshees, kind of new wavy type punkish at that point in time.
Yeah, they made people dance when you went to see them.
Yes, you couldn't deny the pop hooks behind them.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Here we go, man. It's the battle. Opening track, Next to You versus Synchronicity 1. Rival, why don't you start? Which one do you choose?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. They're both like, they both set the tone for each album. They're both super peppy songs. They kind of, you know, Next to You definitely has the punk thing going for it. And that energy just right off the hop with Stewart coming in and the toms and everything like that. It's funny because Next to You, they were saying to Sting that he, you know, don't write these, you know, loves. It's a love song. It shouldn't be a love song. They should say, I'm going to take a gun to you. That's what they wanted to call it. They're not going to sing that, you know. So they said, okay, just as long as you sing it with, you know, some angst and stuff like that. So Sting, you know, he really let it rip. Like that whole album, that whole first album, he's just, you can tell he's just pushing his voice really hard. He's kind of got that Lennon thing too when his voice breaks up. Like I really love that style of singing. So, I mean, I just love that. It's weird too, though, because it's a punk song and it's got a slide guitar solo in the middle, which Stuart said was old wave. but Synchronicity One is just so amazing. That just, you know, as soon as you hear that song, like, I know the rest of the album's coming, and it kind of excites me for that album. And it's just so peppy, and that ride cymbal thing at the beginning. And I just remember seeing that live too, like the Synchronicity concert, and just Stuart playing it and just looking like insane, like he just killed someone or is gonna kill someone. He's just looking into like to nowhere, right? So, you know, I'm gonna have to say Synchronicity, but I love them both so much. It's tough.
It's funny because they played Next to You on the reunion tour as the final song, which was great, and they didn't play Synchronicity, which I felt that was missing from the set. And it is funny to see Crazy Stuart at 23 or whatever he was, in combination with Crazy Stuart at 53, because he still has the crazy face, but now he's got giant glasses and a headband. And it's not quite as crazy when he's got these big, it's like Phil Rudd. The only guys that can get away with playing drums while wearing glasses in an arena is Phil Rudd and Stuart Copeland. That's it. Charlie, don't ever wear glasses on stage. You can't get away with it. But like Rye said, I think Next to You is great. And if it was up against another song, I'd probably choose it. But Synchronicity, man, that's the first song I ever saw live by the band that I paid to see. And to this day, when it goes, and then, of course, the classic, super pretentious sting of using the term Spiritus Mundi as the lyric, which means, hold on, it means world spirit and a muse of sorts that provides inspiration to the poet or writer. I mean, come on, Sting.
Because I could go check online and look, but it just came up now. Did they play Synchronicity in its entirety when you saw them on that tour?
Yes.
Or they just opened, they did. So they did the album in its entirety?
No.
Not
the
album.
They played a lot of it, probably six or seven songs.
They didn't play straight through. Okay.
No, they didn't play straight through. Nobody wants to hear Mystery.
But they opened with Synchronicity. That's why I was curious. Yes.
They usually do Synchronicity 1 and then right into Synchronicity 2, I believe.
Oh, wow. No. Yeah, nobody wants to hear Miss Grudenko live. Let's just put it that way. But Charlie might feel different.
Me too. I love it.
Charlie, which is your choice?
Next to You is just, to me, it's a classic song. And how could you not move to that song when it comes on? You know, we did a cover of it too because we loved it so much.
Really?
Nice.
I didn't know that.
And, you know, it's the first song on their record. And it's just like, that is just an amazing startup. Bam, just hits you. I'm going to say Synchronicity 1. It's weird. It starts off and it sounds kind of like a world music album. It doesn't sound like The Police to me, you know? Yeah. And that's why I said earlier, I'm not a big fan of Synchronicity. It didn't sound like that. It sounded like what's coming from Sting's solo, you know, record.
You're right. Yeah.
And I don't know. Yeah, I just didn't like it that much. So I'm going with you.
Next to You. All right, Paul.
I think this might be a cop out, but I think as a song, Next to You. However, as an opening song on an album, I think Synchronicity. So when you're looking at it as the opening song on the album, I feel like Synchronicity just sets the table for what's coming. And on its own, I might listen to Next to You before I listen to Synchronicity, but I think Synchronicity works better as an opening track and works better in setting the table for what's coming. So I'm going to go with Synchronicity.
So you think it syncs up better?
I think it syncs the album. Yes, Synchronicity syncs up. Yes.
I was just reviewing.
I think it stinks up the album.
Synchronicity.
It's a really good point, though, that you brought out about Sting solo material, because this album really does. Sting's solo material, especially that first record, feels like it's an extension of Synchronicity.
Exactly.
More than Synchronicity feels like it's an extension of the four Police albums before it.
And you can see that coming.
Another reason why the band broke up. Because
I was even just looking at the set list for the tour, and they played 8 songs off Synchronicity. So, I mean, that pretty much sums. And the only songs they didn't play were the ones written by the other guys.
Well, I think too, like the Atlantis is like they're just trying to find their sound. They don't have their sound yet. They're kind of, it's, you know, it's supposed to be a punk punk band. That's what Stuart wants, but it quickly changes and it's not really that. So they're trying to find themselves. And then by synchronicity, they're actually trying to like get away from themselves. You know what I mean? They had like, there's bands like Men at Work and Wang Chung that were kind of stealing the reggae sort of pop thing. And they didn't really want to sound like that anymore. So they kind of were moving away from that, and definitely towards, you know, Sting was moving towards his own solo material.
Well, and it's like you said too, I mean, it was still Stewart's band with Outlandis, or at least, you know, Stewart and Sting's. By the time Synchronicity rolls around, there's no question whose band it is.
Absolutely.
All right, track two. This is kind of a monster of a tune in So Lonely versus Walking in Your Footsteps, a song that actually uses the word brontosaurus in the lyrics. And if it's not Iron Maiden, I'm not sure if I want to hear that in a song. What do you think, Paul?
I think I got to go So Lonely on this one. I love Walking in Your Footsteps, but So Lonely, you put it best. You said monster. I mean, that's just So Lonely. Just that's a powerhouse. It crushes. And you know what? It crushes the brontosaurus. I'm going So Lonely.
It's funny, Walking in Your Footsteps, and you see it live because they break it down, and it's all played, and Sting's actually playing a pan flute, you know, doo-doo-doo. And I guess from what I heard, and I think Ryan could back me up on this, that Sting was one of those guys, much like McCartney, who could go find an instrument and mess around with it. Charlie's probably the same. Mess around with it for 20, 30 minutes, and suddenly he's ready to play it on an album. And that's why Stewart said that Sting is so good, he should have been drowned at birth.
That's great.
But I gotta go with So Lonely. That's just one of the greatest tunes. And like you said, Charlie, that was actually written off of a Bob Marley riff that Sting was listening to. He wanted to do kind of a Bob Marley and the Wailers type of a vibe. And something else that I kind of heard is that when Sting was first, this could be urban legend because he'd already been playing for a long time, but singing and playing at first, Sting wasn't as good as he would become. So he used to leave a lot of spaces in between his bass lines to sing the melody lines in there. And when you hear So Lonely and Bring on the Night and Walking on the Moon, it seems like that's a bump, like So Lonely, like, like there's not a lot of riffage there. It's more of just keeping it open so he can slice in with his melodies. Rye, I'm taking So Lonely. So what do you think, Rye?
Well, I'm going to have to say So Lonely. I mean, that's the Police format right there. It's, they got the reggae kind of verses, the punk rock, chorus, tons of, you know, just the layered vocals and everything there. I love Walking in Your Footsteps too, which is great. But So Lonely is really, you know, that's the formula right there. And I love the live version. That live album they did in 95 that was released is just amazing. Tons of improvising on there and stuff. I love it. And right at the beginning of that song.
Here, I'll say Sting's part and you say what Stewart says. This is called, no, wait. I'm so lonely.
I can see why.
And the other one is you sing it, Rybo. You intro, you be Sting, I'll be Stewart.
I'm so lonely.
I'm not surprised.
There we go.
You can hear Stewart say that kind of on the drummer's mic off air.
And then Sting laughs awkwardly. He's like, ha, ha,
ha. Charlie, which one you got?
So Lonely or Walking in Your Footsteps. I do like Walking in Your Footsteps. So I love the way that song just starts out.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it sounds like it could be, a world music record the way it starts off.
Great point.
But I mean, I gotta go with So Lonely. Look, think about the way that song starts on the upbeat, right?
Ban out. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
You know, so it's like right there, it's like but there's a guitar solo in this song too.
Yes.
And I love when Andy does guitar solos because they come out of nowhere. It's like, wow, something just happened here, but I don't know exactly what it was, but it was a guitar solo. But that's Andy Summers for you. You know, he just throws in these things that is just so, wow, that's awesome. I love that. I got to put that back. But come on, So Lonely is, it's the Police. It's a signature song.
I find it, see if you guys agree with me on this, that Andy Summers very much reminds me of Alex Lifeson in the way he plays, right? Like, and he's so overshadowed by Stewart as a drummer and Sting as a bass player and singer, Geddy, Neil Peart, and Andy, much like Alex, he plays in moods and phrases and shades. But once in a while, especially later Alex Lifeson, but when he rips out those solos, like this, obviously Alex is probably much better at that than Andy is, but Andy's a great guitar player, man. But most of the time he just sits in the back and chords and lets Sting kind of play the leads, but not in this case.
Can we touch on that? Because you just mentioned Please. Rush. And I always felt Rush took some of the Police stuff and made it Rush.
Ah, yeah. In what way?
Oh, dude. Listen to Neil, especially on the Signals record.
Which is right at that time.
Sounds like Stewart's kit that he's playing. You know, he tuned it a little differently, like Stewart. Alex got this texture now, like sounds like Andy Summers a bit. There's a delay and there's all these things going on. And
it's a great point.
It's not the outfield, but it's definitely like, wow, they influence. And then they ended up using the producer.
Hugh Padgham. And you're exactly right. Cause I forgot to mention that the first Atlantis D'Amore was produced by the Police. And then Synchronicity produced by the Police and Hugh Padgham, like you said, wow, who did do those Rush records. So that's a great point because that was the same time frame as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely and, all those like hi-hat versions.
Let's also point out it was a trio.
Yes, right, exactly.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Okay, we move forward to track three, which is, I mean, gosh, I'd even compare this. Roxanne versus Oh My God.
I like Oh My God better. No. I'm not. The one thing I'll say about Roxanne is when Eddie Murphy did it
in 48 hours.
In what? Not Trading Places.
48 hours.
48 hours. Dude, that was one of the best parts of the movie when he sang Roxanne. Do you guys know that story about the beginning of Roxanne, the laugh and the piano part?
Tell us.
Is this true? That Sting accidentally sat on the piano, like leaned back and sat on the piano, and they left it in, and he laughs.
Yes.
That's true, oh. Right?
That's what it says everywhere online. Yeah, he kind of sits on it and goes, brown.
Yeah. And they left it.
Once again, yeah, I mean, there's really no comparison. I do like Oh My God. I remember when I was a kid, when I bought this record, I just love this kind of a jam at the end, and Stewart's just losing it, and like with the saxophone solo. It's really cool. It's a good tune, but I mean, how do you compare with Roxanne? That'd be like, you know, Maxwell's Silver Hammer versus Yesterday or something.
But it's so weird that it's number three, that song.
Right.
I don't know about the way they pace the record. That's another thing.
The pacing of the record is strange, but I kind of, especially the older I get, I feel like I identify with Synchronicity more and more. I feel like there's just, and again, maybe it's because it's more of that Sting becoming the pretentious scholar solo artist instead of like the punk rock new wave thing. I feel like the pace, Oh My God, works where it is as a lead into everything else that's coming up. And it's this album definitely wasn't, you know, if we're putting together records from an A&R perspective, we're putting singles in a certain spot. You know, you're leading with your strongest song. You've got a strong song third. You've got a ballad in a certain place. This album just completely, like no album before it, just defied all of that. Like you flip to side B and it's single, 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 single. And their albums didn't do that before. And I can't help but feel like that was intentional.
I think, too, like if you're looking at Walking in Your Footsteps, followed by Mother and Grudenko right before Synchronicity 2, that they needed the up-tempo kind of a rocker there.
Yeah.
So it fits the point. Like I said, Sting probably wrote this song in 5 minutes. I don't know. But to me, it's still a great tune. It's just not worthy of Roxanne status.
You know,
it's angry and frustrating, which is like it also just to the whole tenor of the record. But
yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it kind of sets up the rest of the album kind of nice, but it also seems kind of like a throwback from Ghost in the Machine. It's a very Ghost in the Machine type track where it's got the horns. It's kind of funky.
Hungry for You type thing, right?
Yeah. So I don't know if that was the first song written, but
track. Then we go to the fourth song, "Hole in My Life," versus "Mother." There you go. Now we start wondering. You're like, this is why I love the classic album class. You're like, oh, it's obviously synchronicity until you do the track by track, right? So now here we are with "Hole in My Life" once again versus "Mother." Now "Mother" is one of those kind of strange Andy Summers tunes, and there's three of them that I can think of. Is "Be My Girl Sally," which I mentioned earlier, and we'll talk about. There's "Mother," and of course then there's "Friends," which was the B-side of "Do-Do-Do-Do-Da-Da-Da." So Andy probably loved that, the fact that all these huge singles had his song as the B-side. I probably heard "Friends" more than I heard any other song on Zenyatta besides "Do-Do-Do-Do." Nice. But I'll start off with this one. I mean, "Mother" is, you know, once again, it's a strange, almost Zappa-esque type of a tune. It's fine, but I mean, "Hole in My Life" is much more kind of one of those early Sting kind of reggae, new wave type things with a yep. Yep. So I'm taking "Hole in My Life." What do you think, Rye?
Oh, well, I got to go "Hole in My Life" too. I mean, great, great live song too, to just get everyone. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. You know, yep. Just getting everyone jump. It's such a bouncy song. You just see people just, you know, bouncing up and down on pogo balls before there were pogo balls. Right.
But, great whistle test. Yeah.
Yeah. But "Mother" is also pretty interesting too. It's like an odd time. It's in 7/4, which is, they don't do too many things like that. It's kind of cool Middle Eastern kind of solo in there, and it does kind of, like Charlie's saying, like kind of have that world music kind of feel. Synchronicity sort of has that, and it starts getting a little bit exotic with "Mother." Kind of gives you that little touch of this exotic type music that is going to come later at the very end of Synchronicity with the last couple tracks. They're very,
it's also sounding. Also some two points I want to make. This is some great lyrics, like every girl I talk to becomes my mother in the end. Like, boy, ain't that the truth, right? We're all terrified of our respective others. But the other one is that once again, when Stewart did Talk Is Jericho, he said that because he grew up, you guys know that his dad was the head of the CIA, and he grew up kind of in Iran, I think it was, right? Is that where he grew up? Somewhere in the Middle East.
Iraq, yeah, somewhere.
He said that his early years of drumming had that Middle Eastern feel because that's where he was living. So he always had that Middle Eastern mind frame when he was putting together his percussion parts, which, Charlie, like you said, you've mentioned world music many times. That's where it comes from, is his background of growing up in the Middle East.
And his solo albums kind of go even deeper.
Right into that. Charlie, what do you choose between "Hole" and "Mother"?
I like "Hole in My Life." Reminds me of a Beatles song, especially that break section.
Yeah. That's right. That's a good point.
And yeah, I like that song too. "Mother," I also like. This is a tough one because I do think this is a really good Andy Summers song. That line you just mentioned, Chris, it's like Andy had that Monty Python type of thing about it.
Right on, bingo, yeah.
And he'd hit with those things. I'd bounce her in the kitchen, I'd bounce her in the hall. You know, it was just funny. It could be a skit on a Python show, you know?
Right.
And yeah, his playing on it is really, really good too. So I don't know. I'm going to go with "Hole in My Life." It reminds me of a Beatle tune. So yeah, I'm going to go "Hole in My Life." By the way, so far, every song is on the first album for me.
For you. Gotcha. Okay. Paul?
This is, I really, really want to say "Mother" on this one, but I think I got to go with "Hole in the Life." I mean, like Charlie said, there's definitely a Beatles-esque quality to this. The "Mother" to me almost plays out more like an interlude than it does like a full song. Like it's like a bridge.
Right.
And I love it. I think it's great. It's powerful. It's like one of the more jarring moments on the record for me. Like it always just snaps you to attention. And like you said, the lyric about it becomes my mother. It's just like, you feel it. You go like, God, I hear you. But at the same time, it's not like a full song. It feels like it's more of like an interlude to me. So I'm going to go with "Hole in My Life" for that reason. And I get that Beatles-esque quality to "Hole in My Life." It's just infectious.
Yeah. And like you said, Charlie, there's a real kind of first side dominance over Synchronicity, but that ends very quickly. But
is it fair though to judge, because is it fair to judge an album by which song you like more? Because I feel like there's also a cohesiveness that goes into the records. Like if at the end of this, I mean, you know, Synchronicity is one of my favorite records of all time. At the end of this, if track by track, I like songs more on the first record, does that mean it's a better record? Or does it like it's always interesting having this conversation because I've done it with Kiss records before where it doesn't work. It just doesn't work that way.
Well, and the thing is with the classic album clash is that we all agree that these are both great records. It's just, you know, we're delving into it and kind of seeing
it's like the nerdy nuances of it at this point. Yeah, exactly.
So it doesn't really matter because we both agree that I put on either one of these records and love every song. So here's one that I always forget how it goes until I hear it, which is Peanuts up against Miss Gradenko, which is Stewart's. Actually, both these songs are Stewart's contributions to each record. Stewart and Sting wrote Peanuts, and Stewart, of course, wrote Gradenko on his own. What do you think, Paul?
God, this is kind of like, I don't want to say this is the Who Cares for me, but this is kind of like and they're both the last song on side one. It's just like, just we'll put it away. But I'm going to go with Miss Gradenko again. It's getting the edge because of the way the album plays out for me. I feel like the flow, it has a better flow to it within the context of the rest of the record. And I just, Peanuts is one that I just don't need to hear all the time. I feel like this is where the delineation starts between the two records, because this is where like Synchronicity just ramps up and becomes a behemoth with songs. I mean, side two of Synchronicity is just insane. It's probably the greatest side two ever. And I feel like this is where it starts. You know, I mean, it's just Peanuts to me, it just doesn't do it.
Gradenko. What do you think, Charlie?
I like elements of Peanuts, the Sting towards the end where he's really pushing it, pushing his voice, you know. But yeah, like Paul said, it's like whatever. I'm going to go with Miss Gradenko because this song reminds me of something that should have been on Regatta de Blanc. And he does a great solo in this song.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with, this is the first time I'm picking a Synchronicity song.
What do you think, Rye?
I agree. I think the one thing I really like about it, it does sound like a track from Regatta. So it's kind of nice that they're, you know, you get Mother, which is kind of saying, okay, they're not all going to be hits on this album. Obviously that one's not a hit. But Miss Gradenko too is just kind of a throwback, and it's got that cool guitar stuff, and the drums are amazing, and that there's all these like really cool things going on there. Peanuts is about Rod Stewart, which I didn't know.
Yeah,
which is kind of funny.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I guess Sting was kind of, he used to idolize him, and then thought he kind of sold out or whatever. Jeez,
sound
familiar? But there's also that weird solo in there. Like, what is that? It's like an oboe or a melodica or sousaphone. Like, what is that?
It hurts.
It does. But so I'm going to go Gradenko for sure. And it also, I kind of like how, as far as Synchronicity going together, like how all the songs kind of flow and they're all, it's kind of like a concept album. Like Paul said, it's kind of like The Wall a little bit. And you got Mother, where he's talking about the phone call, which is like a star fall, a phone call, it joins all, right? And then Miss Gradenko is kind of almost like one of the, one of the office girls that pouts and preens like cheap tarts on a red light street.
Red light street. You know? Wow.
Yeah. Well, I love Gradenko. I think it's great.
You know, I walked in here thinking Peanuts, but Miss Gradenko, man, it's you know what I love about it too is it's a Beatles song. And what I mean by that is it's super hooky, it's super poppy, and it's 2 minutes long. And in 1983, nobody was writing a 2 minute song, where most of the early Beatles stuff is very short. It punches you, it gets you, and it goes. If it was a 4 minute song, it wouldn't work, but it's perfect for a 2 minute song. And I always wondered who Miss Gradenko is. It had to be someone that Stewart knew when he was a kid, maybe a babysitter or a science teacher or something along those lines, you know?
What an awkward name. Like, you know, that's not going to be a hit. Like, here's the new hit by the police. Miss Gradenko.
Miss Gradenko, yeah. Exactly.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, now we go to another monster. Actually, it's this one's a tough one for me. It's Can't Stand Losing You versus Synchronicity 2. That could be the hardest one on the record for us to have to choose. Who wants to start with that one?
Basically, this is impossible.
Right.
Because it is. Can't Stand Losing You is, that's a signature Police song. Everything about it is the Police. That's their sound. That's their brand, you know? But then you hear Synchronicity too. That's the Police, dude. That is the Police. This is a hard one. I don't even think I could. I'm going to go with Synchronicity too.
Yeah.
Only, I'll tell you why. Because of the video.
Ooh. with the dark Scottish lock?
Kind of like, I don't know, apocalyptic looking Mad Max type of theme. You know, I love it. And I love the way Stewart plays in this song. He holds it back.
Hmm.
He probably wanted to rip at one point, but he just held it back so much, you know. And it's a great song. Great riff, too. So metal.
Mm, very metal. And it's funny because every band that's tried to cover it ever since, you mentioned Queensryche, I know there's been a few, nobody even comes close. Nobody even comes close to this.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. You know what? I wouldn't touch any Police song. I mean, well, nothing from this record, at least. You know what I mean? Because this is very different level Stingo type stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to go, Synchronicity 2, probably one of the greatest sets of lyrics written of all time. And Rybo and I have talked about this at length, about how we think, well, I won't speak for Ryan, but you can agree with me. I feel that the song is about a guy who's ready to kill his family. And he's got this mundane existence of, you know, just grandmother screaming at the wall, shouting above the din of Rice Krispies. It's, my life is just boring and terrible, and packed like lemmings into shining metal boxes. And his life is just, you know, there's nothing going on. And daddy's staring into the distance. And deep down inside, there's something crawling from the slime at the bottom of a dark Scottish lake, right? And then finally the monster comes to surface, and there's a shadow on the door of a cottage on the shore of a dark Scottish lake. And this is the murderous intent that's finally come from the depths, which has now risen, and now it's about to come out, and he's going to kill somebody, you know. And that's really, to get really deep about it. And then, of course, the other great line of every single meeting with the so-called superiors is a humiliating kick in the crotch. I mean, it's so just degrading and just, yeah. I mean, I love Can't Stand Losing You. That might be my second favorite Police song of all time, but Synchronicity 2 is my favorite. So that takes the cake. What do you think, Rye?
Very interesting. Actually, now that we're talking about it, I mean, it's kind of interesting because both these songs are almost like a suicidal, they're both kind of like, right, suicide in a way, right? Or homicide or something. I don't know if I agree with you 100%. I like your theory of the Synchronicity lyrics, but to me, it's a more broader idea of just, you know, Sting's kind of political kind of outlook or environmental outlook on life, that where, hey, we think there's this thing that's this Loch Ness monster that no one really believes, but it is there and it is slowly creeping towards us. And if we just try to pretend that it doesn't exist and we just pretend that nothing's going on, eventually it's going to come up and it's going to just devour all of us. So I kind of think of it as more of a bigger
picture thing.
Although it's a very personal story, and I love the lyrics. They're great. And I have to say, Can't Stand Losing You is one of the best Police songs, and it's probably the best song on Outlandish, but Synchronicity 2 is maybe maybe my favorite song. So I'd have to go Synchronicity 2. And I actually point out too that when they released Can't Stand Losing You, it had the cover of it was Stewart standing on a block of ice with a noose around his neck. And so it got pulled from the shelves and stuff like that too. They didn't want to release it because, of course, he was still trying to put punk thing, you know.
As the ice melts, then he would hang.
That's, yeah.
Paul,
I think this song is a great example of like when everything about the Police comes together. And you brought up like people trying to cover it, and like, well, that Queensryche cover is a great example. I feel like I could talk ill of Queensryche because I love them so much I can get away with it. It just came across like a bunch of people delivering a song with yes. absolutely no context and no feeling. It was just kind of like it was just bland, and just Jeff's just delivering lyrics. He wasn't connecting with them. And the beautiful thing about this song, it is my favorite Police song because of the lyrics. I'm a lyric guy. I'm not a musician. I love words. This song is literally one of the most perfectly written set of lyrics I've ever seen in music. And like the din, just shouting over the din of our Rice Krispies, it's like, God, even as a kid when I didn't know what any of this meant, that line meant something. It was like, you got it. It was just like, because the snap, crackle, pop, the line about the wife, just like the mundane, like shouting over the mundane minutiae of her day. I agree with Rybo. I don't know that this is technically about somebody going and, you know, going to kill their family. I feel like this whole record is about trying to find that connection in the world that we're just not finding. And this song is just, you know, you've got your perfect life. You've got your kids. You've got your wife. You've got your house. You've got your job. And you know what? You hate your life. It's mm-hmm. just, you're not happy. And I feel like it's about trying to find that connection that so many people are missing. And everything about it is just, it's just an attack on that 9-to-5 blue collar existence that is crammed down people's throats. And I literally think it's a perfect song.
Just to add one thing in there, is Andy's guitar solo, his choices for this solo are just brilliant, because he could have played a shredder solo. He could have played whatever, but he chose something that really fits the vibe of the song. It almost sounds like, if you want to go the Loch Ness Monster route, and I've always been obsessed with the Loch Ness Monster, it sounds like what might be playing was as the Loch Ness Monster is underneath the surface coming up. Like, it's just, dude, it's perfect. It's brilliant.
The chemistry of everybody working together. Like, you don't need an over-the-top guitar solo. You don't need, I mean, everything just melds perfectly in this.
But a lot of guitar players wouldn't do that. Like Charlie said earlier, to play that restrained, knowing that you don't get a lot of solos when you're in the Police. Here you go, Andy. Here's your four bars. What am I going to do? I'm going to make weird squealing noise. Like, it's a very Alex Lifeson thing, who probably got that from him. I'm just going to do little weird, moody, textury shading things.
Atmosphere,
right, atmosphere. Charlie? Definitely. Exactly.
He's great at that.
It also has that kind of industrial sound to it as well, right? Which is
the lyrics, yeah.
Yeah, the lyrics, yeah. And it's kind of neat, because Can't Stand Losing You, too, is a kind of a, the suicide, you know, he's a young teenager with suicidal thoughts. And then the Synchronicity 2 is like a middle-aged man going through
suicidal thoughts. I've always loved the line, and my LP records, and they all scratched. They all scratched.
Yeah, all scratched. But I think that's the darkness of the Police too, which is what it's the heaviness, if you will. You know, you don't have to be a metal band to be heavy.
That's
and
right.
there was always a heaviness to the Police. And that was something I identified with really, really early. They weren't bright and poppy. You know, before I got into Black Sabbath, before I got into heavy music, the Police were pop, but they weren't happy. They were on the radio, but they were heavy, and they were sonically, you knew you were hearing something that was deeper than typical top 40. It's deeper, like you said, Rybo, deeper than Corey Hart, deeper than Men at Work. There was something.
Once again,
the songs were right up there.
It goes back to the Beatles comparison. The Beatles always had that darkness, and I think a lot of it stemmed from the relationship, good and bad, with Stewart and Sting. All right, now we do, this is where it starts getting to be a massacre. Possibly Truth Hits Everybody versus Every Breath You Take.
Next.
I mean, Every Breath You Take, it's one of those songs like Enter Sandman or You Shook Me All Night Long or Stairway to Heaven. You're like, I never want to hear this song again until you hear it again. And you go, holy shit, this song is just amazing. The only thing that I'll say, and obviously I'm choosing Every Breath You Take, is that that guitar part was written by Andy, and Sting used it and never gave him a songwriting credit. So thanks, Sting, Rival, you can elaborate on that. Didn't you read the article about that one time?
Oh yeah, and he said he made however many millions of dollars, and he said, yeah. Well, Stewart said, well, yeah, give Andy some of that money. He said, I spent it already. Thanks a lot, Puff Daddy. Puff Daddy can use it, but
yeah, the Puff Daddy riff is all Andy's riff.
It's just the riff. That song is so much that riff. If he didn't come up with that riff, I don't know if it wouldn't have had the same impact that it does.
It's like the riff in Message in a Bottle. It's the same type of...
Right.
You know Andy wrote that.
Definitely.
Yeah. You know, it stinks of him.
Wasn't there like some kind of an original arrangement of that too, where it was like a bossa nova or something? It was quicker or something like that? I can't remember exactly how it was. There's somebody messed with the arrangement on that.
All I know is this video was played 24/7 on MTV.
Totally.
Yeah.
And what is the snare drum kind of morphs into the ashtray, or the ashtray morphs into the snare? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I remember it was one of the first videos that was black and white, but it had a bluish tint to it. And I also think they did one with like a red tint and then a yellowish tint.
Oh.
MTV. Wow. I just remember this song constantly everywhere, like with or without you. And that
yep.
was just yeah. everywhere. Yep. You couldn't get away from it. You go to the bathroom, it's like, oh, this song is on again.
Yeah.
Couldn't deal with it.
The thing is, too, is that Sting was so perfect for MTV. I mean, the guy was at this point, too, like he didn't just have his little goofy blonde, like he had the spiky hair and the cheekbones. Like, dude, that guy was, he was the sex symbol of all sex symbols. He was perfect for that, for MTV.
He was new wave. He looked like,
yeah.
new wave personified. It was Sting. You know what I mean? Just yeah. everything about him.
He's the picture, right?
But this song, like, I love the song. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, if I don't hear it again, I'm fine. And like, what's the one he wrote? If you love somebody, set them free.
Yeah, set them free. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to hear that one either.
This band was just so pervasive in pop culture. My eighth grade math teacher, who since I'm about to say not nice things about him, I won't name his name, but he had like this, he had like the really creepy pedophile mustache, and he probably wore a toupee. We're not sure. And he had a super thick New York accent, and he was a great math teacher, but it was just funny. He was like one of those guys that was trying to be hip. And whenever he would pass out our weekly math quizzes, he would say, whatever move you make, I'll be watching you, like trying to get us not to cheat. And by the end of the year, we were so sick of hearing him talk, like, quote the police. I was like, oh, God. Yeah. Song by a landslide.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You know what? I agree with Charlie, too. Probably we're pretty sick of hearing it. It's not like Message in a Bottle for me. If that song comes on the radio, I'll probably change it. I'm tired of it. Sting and Stewart, they almost killed each other in the studio regarding yes. the song. And Hugh Padgham or whatever almost left the session during this particular song. And then there's like no hi-hat in the beginning of the whole song. Just starts, there's like no, I could see just Sting just turning it down saying, just get rid of that.
No, I think he's playing it on the floor tom and the snare.
Yeah, it's very
sparse.
It starts
with like a flam. And he doesn't play the hi-hat until... I think the pre-chorus.
Yeah. Can't you see that you belong to me or whatever? Yeah.
So this song actually in 2019, I don't know if you guys looked it up, but it actually is in, it got an award for having the most radio plays in history.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a BMI award or whatever that said over 15 million plays or something like that. So
you know,
it beat out You've Lost That Loving Feeling.
You know, Andy Summers must be a pretty nice guy, because I'd be outside of Sting's out with a shotgun going, write me a check right now.
Yeah.
And just as a quick line of what Rival said, the recording process was fraught with difficulties as personal tensions between Sting and Copeland came to the fore. Sting and Copeland hated each other with verbal and physical fights in the studio. The tensions almost led to the recording session being canceled until a meeting involving the band and the group's manager, Miles Copeland, resulted in a truce and agreement to continue. Nice. I mean, we've all been in bands, with the exception of Paul. Like, guys get on your nerves, but can you imagine getting into a fist fight in the studio with your band? I mean, maybe you have, Charlie. I don't know. But I was thinking, if it ever gets to that point.
To be fair, I've, I've probably refereed more band fights than you guys have. Well,
I was on the road with one of your bands and witnessed fist fights about three or four times with those dudes.
I think you were on the last tour before they broke, before the singer got tossed, right?
That's the one. Yeah, that's the
one. Yeah, that was the one. Yeah.
All right. So now we move on to another Born in the 50s versus King of Pain.
Another song that if you never hear it again, right? I mean, yeah.
But King of Pain starts, I think we've done this before, Charlie, where we sit down and listen to weird entrances on the drums, and everybody's got something to hide, except for me and my monkey is one. Was it House of a Girl Gone Bad? Yeah, that's Girl Gone Bad. And King of Pain is another one that comes in kind of strangely. Now, when I brought this up to Stuart, he looked at me like I had three heads, but I've listened to it a bunch of times. There is something weird about the entrance to that song. Am I totally off base on this? You guys are drummers.
It's weird.
I don't know. It's just,
it doesn't come in on the one. It doesn't come in quite where it's supposed to. It's like a little bit delayed or something.
One and a half or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I'm not thinking of King of Pain. I'm thinking of Wrapped
Around. There's a little black spot on the sun today. And then it goes ding, 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 ding. Right?
That's where he comes in. He comes in on the end.
One end, right?
He's, yeah.
Well, my point is it like the Beatles? Like, did he do that on purpose? Or is that just when he saw it? Because when I told it to him, he's like, no, I didn't. I didn't come in weird at all. I'm like, and of course, I'm just melting. Like, I don't know. I was like, well, sorry, I thought you did.
Sorry.
Never tell a drummer he came in at the wrong time.
Right.
But there is something to it, though, isn't there, right? If you listen to it, it's like you said, the one and.
Yeah.
One who's probably got a complex at this point.
What's that?
After everything, especially a drummer who's probably got a complex at this point for all the heat he's taken from the Doors. It's like, oh.
Oh, my God. What a weird lineup that was. Stuart Copeland and the Doors? Like, who thought that was a good idea?
Very weird.
Oysterhead, I understand, but the Doors?
Yeah, this song to me, this song has always been linked in my head. When I heard Black Hole Sun for the first time from Soundgarden, it just, for some reason, brought me back to King of Pain. And I kind of look at, like, King of Pain as the father of Black Hole Sun. I don't know if anyone else sees that at all, but I always like this song. This is another one that you just hear it so much. It's just, it's kind of like the fabric of our culture, and I never get sick of it.
I always love the line, there's a black hat caught in a high treetop.
Yeah.
You can visualize that. You can see that. You know, we've all had something, whether it's a kite or a jacket or something. But yeah, I mean, and listen, the Born in the 50s, that's a fun little romp, but it's pretty forgettable. So King of Pain for me, King of Pain for Paul. Ribo, anything?
I got to go King of Pain. I mean, they're both pretty cool, but King of Pain is awesome. But again, I'm pretty sick of that song too. I've heard it a million times, but it is very descriptive. Like you say, it kind of paints a picture really nicely. Like every line, you have a vision in your head of what it looks like. It paints a really nice picture, which is pretty cool. And it's dark. So I like that.
There's a skeleton choking on a crust of bread. It's like, wow.
Oh yeah.
Charlie, you got anything to say about either song?
I'm going to go with King of Pain because it's just I like Stuart's intro, the way he comes into the song.
See, next time I go back to his house, I'm taking you guys with me. The drummers go, see, you did come in on a weird time.
There's a lot of Stuart in that song. That's just so Stuart. It's such a, it's the way he plays, the way he'll flam something going into the chorus, blah, you know, him, the way he stinks that song up with all that stuff.
Do you notice how he does a lot of double snare hits too with both sticks? Like,
yeah,
pachong. He does it all the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, pachong, like I that's said, what you're describing.
Slam the sticks, just he adds that little thing to it that's just such a little drum hook, you know?
Yeah.
Because he plays with the traditional grip too. That's what you call it, kind of the jazz Charlie Watts
thing too.
Yeah, he hits hard.
Definitely a monster player. All right, now we get to my second favorite Police song when I was 10, Be My Girl Sally.
Out of the two that you knew.
Yeah, exactly. Versus Wrapped Around Your Finger. I'll start. I remember when I bought Synchronicity, the record, or however I got it, probably as a present or something. I really started to get burned out at this point in time because it really rocks. And then, like you said, Paul, side two actually ends with Synchronicity too. Side one. So Synchronicity, side two is Breath, Pain, Wrapped in Your Finger, and Tea in the Sahara. All of those songs are very moody songs. King's a little bit more rocking, but that's pretty much three ballads and one. And for us, I just got bogged down, like Wrapped Around Your Finger. And they're awesome songs. But as a kid, it was too much for me, where it was like, this is great, this is great. There's a ballad, there's another one. Yeah. So that kind of was always an issue for me. But now, obviously, Wrapped Around Your Finger. I mean, what a great chorus. Super descriptive once again. But there's something to be said about a song that combines kind of a Beatles, kind of a Kinks hook, along with an ode to a man's blow up doll, where it just stops. And then, like Charlie said, Andy goes into this kind of Monty Python. She came all wrapped in cardboard, all pink and shriveled down. A breath of air was all she needed to make her lose that frown. I took her to the bedroom and pumped her with some life. And later in that moment, the girl became my wife. <It's> like, what the hell is going on here? I'll take Wrapped Around Your Finger only because of my next choice for the track 10. But it's pretty close because Sally's just, like I said, all I think about is You Know My Name, Look Up the Number, and just that weirdness of the Beatles, which is also kind of a Zappa trait and a Monty Python trait. So, but I'll give it Finger by a nudge. What do you think, Paul?
I'm going to agree with you completely. The novelty, Finger is just a little bit more straightforward. I really appreciate the novelty of the blow up doll because that is freaking hysterical. However, if I'm going to keep going back to the song over and over again, I mean, Wrapped Around Your Finger. And again, this is all, where was I 20 years ago as opposed to today? Right. I think I find myself, again, like I said earlier, the older I get, the more I'm able to identify with a lot of Synchronicity. And again, I think there's just like these elements that tie it together, you know, Wrapped Around Your Finger. And I'll be wrapped around your finger. It's like, you know, that identity that you have with somebody. And I feel like it's just, I'll go back to this one because of that context, you know, that lyrical context.
Gotcha. What do you think, Charlie?
I agree with Paul about that. The lyrical content in this song is, when you're in a relationship, it kind of hits you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But this song, I have to be in the mood to hear this song.
Right.
If it comes on and I'm having a good time and this comes on, it's just like a downer for me. It's like, I don't want to hear this song. And that's the way I feel the rest of this record goes.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, you know, nothing really pumps me up, really, you know.
It's very atmospheric.
Well, it's not a happy record.
No, it's not. And but the video was beautiful. I love the way it was
candles
and everything with the candles, and it was great. And I think that made me like the song a bit more. You know, like most of the time back then, videos would probably make you like the song
if
you really didn't care for it too much, you know. Mm. Like girls just want to have fun. Oh yeah, it's a good song, but the video is fucking hilarious, you know, it's great.
It's so fun, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So
and I never had MTV. So it's so crazy because you guys keep referring to the videos. I never saw the videos until my VH1 years later. So it was like, for me, I never saw these videos as a kid growing up because I lived in the woods in Connecticut and we didn't have cable. We didn't have MTV. It didn't come to where we lived, so we couldn't have it. So I literally never saw these videos until I worked for VH1. And it's so interesting to hear people talk about how the videos shaped the way that they hear the music, because I never had that advantage. It was,
you didn't have,
I don't know, is it an advantage or is it a disadvantage at the end of the day?
No, you did. Hey, dude, you think you lived in the woods? You lived in the woods of Connecticut. We lived in the woods of Winnipeg, Canada. We didn't have much MTV either. We might have had much music, maybe.
Much music, right?
We still don't have YouTube. I don't even know how I'm doing this right now.
On your Commodore 64, right?
He had one.
You had one?
Ryan, what do you think?
It's funny Paul said that, because we didn't have cable either, you know, when we were in the Bronx. We had this station called U68. Uh-huh. And you had to go all the way to channel 68, and it was from New Jersey, and they would play videos and stuff. But, yeah. You know, and then there was another show called Friday Night Videos.
Friday Night Videos. We had that. Say,
Friday Night Videos is what I saw everything on. And then I had one friend of ours.
There was another show, too, besides Friday Night Videos.
See, and then one of my friends would tape Headbangers Ball. Like, once a month, he would tape Headbangers Ball, and we would literally pass the tape around so we could see, like, the metal videos. But, yeah. But obviously, you weren't seeing the police on Headbangers Ball. Yeah, the Power Hour.
You know what's funny is if you guys watch Fox News with all the political coverage, there's a guy called John Roberts, and he's always front row at all the presidential press conferences or whatever. He came from Canada. His name was J.D. Roberts, and he was the host of the Power Hour. So this will be the equivalent of like Jamie Josta being the court reporter for news.
Wow.
Rybo, which song do you choose between the two?
Well, the thing about like Be My Girl Sally is I really love the quirkiness of the police. And, you know, that's a Stuart Copeland influence. And that really made me kind of get obsessed with the police. I think if they were all Sting kind of serious songs, I wouldn't have had the same affection that I have for the police. And so Be My Girl Sally just kind of really just throws it in your face that these guys are, you know, they don't care or they, I don't know what it is, but they're willing to go a little out there. It just in the way that Mother kind of being on Synchronicity, just to show that, hey, we're kind of different than your average band. But that being said, you know, Wrapped Around Your Finger, that might be my favorite song on the second side of Synchronicity. Actually, I love there's so many, the guitar parts on there are so amazing, and you can't tell if it's keyboards or if it's guitars. There's all these like little guitar swells, and it's got that sort of exotic sound to it, but it's moving towards more of a Sting solo kind of career, but it's got that world music. There's something really alluring about it that kind of takes you on a journey. It takes you kind of away, which is pretty cool. And there's some great splash work on there from Stuart and stuff. I think that's a great song, so I'm gonna have to go with that.
Especially when it feels like it could just be Sting on his own until the drums kick in at that certain part with the double snare. Ka-chong. All right, final track, Masoko Tanga versus T in the Sahara. What do you think, Charlie?
Well, I like both these songs, but I think Tea in the Sahara reminds me of Walking on the Moon.
Mm.
And it's definitely something that it would have been on Sting's first solo album. Totally has that feel.
Does. It totally does.
But I don't know, man. This is not an easy one for me either, because I love the way that album ends, the first album ends. I'm going to go with, I don't know, Can I Come Back?
This is the hardest one. Okay, I'll jump in. I'm going to make it easier for you, Charlie. I'm a Masoko Tanga guy all the way. From the moment I heard the song, here's one of my favorite elements of the Police that people never talk about. It's almost like Gene Simmons and Kiss. Sting's bass playing is fucking great. It's second to none. And you saw that on the reunion tour they did when the world starts running down, you do the best of what's still around. They did a big jam at the end, which was all Sting and Andy. And Sting is so great. And Masoko Tanga is basically a Sting bass solo. And all Andy does is the Alex Lyson. And all it is bing, digga, 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 bing, digga, 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 digga. And then here's the best part. You think that he's just like kind of scatting over the top.
Yeah.
But it's also like Masoko Tanga is Swahili and he's kind of scatting, but is almost like here's the lyrics. Remember the ones that we talked about as far as like a trollop on a red light street and the humility kick in the crotch. Or here's another one. Don't buy bossy de la lambombe, ping pong dolly zole da la lo, ki wa wadi kamale do de. I don't think he's singing perfect Swahili, but it's Sting, so he probably does know how to speak Swahili, because why wouldn't he? You know?
Right.
He can have sex for 90 minutes. Why can't he speak Swahili and play great bass? So
he probably watched Help. That's why.
Exactly. So once again, Tea in the Sahara, great tune, but it was just too much for me. There's too many ballads in a row, and the Masoko has the energy that I love about the Police, and Sting's just immaculate bass playing. So I'm taking that all the way.
Okay, I'm going with Chris too.
All right, Masoka. What do you think, Paul?
I love Tina Sahara. I got to go Tina Sahara. And I totally vibe with everything you're saying. Tina Sahara to me, and again, it goes back to, as far as the album goes, it's such a, I feel like it's just a perfect ending for the album. There's like a hopefulness to it. There's a hopefulness to it, but there's also just the dark despair. It's a, like you feel like, oh, this, the optimism of having tea in the Sahara, the whole meeting with the, and in the end, it doesn't happen and they just rot away like waiting. I feel like it's the perfect, it's airy. It's got this like ethereal feel to it as it ends the album. And it's, you feel like it's happy, but it's just dark and brutally sad. And I feel like it's just the perfect ending to this record.
And the perfect ending to the Police's career, to be honest with you, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Rybo?
Yeah, I agree with everything you guys have all said. I mean, it's a depressing ending for the album. It just leaves you kind of wanting more, you know, it's leaves you with that feeling in your gut. I don't know. And maybe that's kind of why I would almost want to pick Masoko Tango. I can't even pronounce it, but it kind of, and that song kind of sounds like tequila to me though. That's, I've always thought of that. I could just imagine Pee Wee Herman dancing to that song, and it kind of throws me into a different headspace. But you know, it's cool drums in there too, and it's another one of their, the sort of Police thing where they just had to come up with the track, and they just, you could tell they just basically banged it out in like one or two takes.
It's a jam.
It's got that, like that nice. Yeah. And I that's another thing that I always loved about the Police too. Not everything was so refined, you know, and definitely Synchronicity. That whole album is very refined compared to all of their other albums, but especially the first one.
One of the best jams that they've ever made a song into is on Zenyatta Mandata, Voices in My Head. Oh. It's like one of the best songs, and like nobody talks about
it. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
It's so amazing. Stewart plays so great on that song.
Amazing. Too. Amazing.
And for the reunion, that jam that I told you about, it starts with Voices, and then it morphs into When the World Keeps Running Down, You Do the Best of What's Still Around. So it was a big, long kind of 8-minute piece, which was basically just an instrumental. So it was very, very cool stuff. And also, too, just once again, the comparison between the Beatles and the Police. Look how the Police ended their, you know, kind of album release career in comparison to how the Beatles left theirs with, you know, and in the end, the love you make is equal to love you take. And this one ends with like this tea in the Sahara, and we're all dead and we're done.
We're all dying in the desert with sand running through. Yeah. It's also just funny because you talk about like the last two songs on Outlandish. It's, you've got a blow up doll, and then you say something that Rybo, you said something that reminds you of tequila with Pee Wee Herman dancing. And it's just like the, I feel like it's how the band changed and morphed. And like you said, I think, right, Chris, earlier, this totally just bridges us right now to the pretentious Sting solo career.
Yeah.
And I'm a fan of the beginning of the pretentious. I'm a huge fan of the beginning of the pretentious Sting solo career. And then it just got so far gone. Yeah. He started to lose me. And it was like, but this is like, this ending is nothing like, you don't think of Pee Wee Herman when you hear this ending, you know, it's,
yeah,
there's no blow up dolls on this album.
We all like Dream of the Blue Turtles, but we all skipped Sting's Loot album.
Exactly. I didn't
even know that. And we will say that there is a bonus track if you had the cassette of Murder by Numbers, but we're talking the vinyl. So if anybody says, well, there was a 11th track, there was, but it was a bonus track. So this album ends with Tea in the Sahara. So our debate comes to an end, and now we basically have the final question of which album do you choose, Synchronicity or Outlandish D'Amour, as your favorite of the two? Paul?
I'll go first, since I've said this repeatedly already. It's one of my favorite albums of all time. It's
what is Synchronicity?
Synchronicity, yeah. Yeah, Synchronicity, it's one of my Desert Island picks. It's one of my favorite albums of all time, and it's Synchronicity by a landslide. And I love Outlandish. I love the whole Police catalog, but Synchronicity to me is up there with, it's up there with Perfect Records. It's up there with Dark Side of the Moon for me. I love this record that much.
Rybo?
Yeah, man. I love Synchronicity. Is one of my favorite albums of all time. I think it's just written. It's immaculate. It's just put together perfectly. I love it, especially if you put Murder by Numbers on there, but I know we're not allowed to talk about it.
Don't say it!
Don't say it!
It's the Voldemort. That. It's the Voldemort of songs.
But so I have to go with that. But at the same time, I mean, probably I would put on Outlandish maybe before Synchronicity. Synchronicity is almost like a whole, I want to listen to the whole album all the way through, where Outlandish is, I can pick, you know, songs off there and just really rock out to that. And, you know, they're both so different. It's really, it's almost apples and oranges to compare them.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I think if I pressed, I'd have to choose Synchronicity.
Well, Rybo, what you just said is interesting because, like I said, I'm a vinyl fanatic, and Synchronicity is one of those albums I don't mind just having Alexa play. You know what I mean? Play Synchronicity. Now she's going to start playing it. I can't say that, but I don't like it. She just started to. But Outlandish is one you go to on vinyl. It just, Outlandish has, like, to me, a much better vinyl feel to it. And Synchronicity almost, it's like the dawning of that digital age where you could listen to it digitally and as a full album. It has a different, it's not as vinyl geared as the other one, I don't think.
Good point, yeah.
What do you think, Charlie? What's your choice?
One album is immature, one album is mature. I'm going to go for the immature one. Because it's just raw, and it's the Police. It's their first album, and there's so many great songs off that record. And it excites me when I hear it. When I listen to Synchronicity, no offense, it just doesn't excite me like that first album does. Kind of makes me want to just have tea in the Sahara. Until Synchronicity 2 comes on, then I'm up.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to agree. I think you can't deny how much of a monster Synchronicity is. I think it's one of the reasons why we're kind of, Charlie and I, kind of poo-pooing it a bit. Any album that has four giant singles like this one has, that's why I think we don't really need to hear it as much. So I'm taking Synchronicity, but I will say this. I think that the 1-2-3 punch of Outlandish, of Next to You, So Lonely, and Roxanne blows away the 1-2-3 punch of Synchronicity, and it might even blow away all the other albums as well. So they came out of the gate just roaring. And once again, that's why we all love the Police. There's only five albums to choose from, and they're all different in a lot of ways, which no band has been able to do that, with the exception of the Beatles. Like, even Guns N' Roses, they went a different direction, but then it was done at the end of Use Your Illusion. So I think just a really great indication of the beginning of this band that had an A album, and the end of this band that had an A-plus album, and all the ones in between were B-pluses or A's as well. So no other rock band will ever have that legacy like the Police did.
A trio,
exactly.
Did the Police end as a ballad band?
Yeah.
Like, just if you look, they ended as a ballad band. They really did.
No, they actually ended on that terrible remix.
That's right, of Don't Dance with Horses. But let's look at the singles, though. The singles were Every Breath You Take, then Wrapped Around Your Finger, then Synchronicity 2, then King of Pain. So singles-wise, they didn't end as a ballad band because they started with the two ballads and then had kind of the – because I consider King of Pain to be more of a rocker than anything. It's not a ballad per se. But I think if you look at the output of the second – the tempo, yeah. But I would say that it ended more of a Sting kind of ballady band than they did – you know, this is the guy that 5 years earlier on Fallout – or sorry, Dead End Job was yelling, "Cunt!" at the end of the song, and 5 years later he's having tea in the Sahara, so you can see his
but the thing about those guys too is each one of them had an identity.
Yes.
Stewart's identity was just like, he was such a monster behind that kit, you know. Just and Sting too, just that,
yeah,
that identity. And then you had Andy, was the only guitar player, and yet he had this type of I don't know why I keep wanting to say like Robert Fripp type of.
Well, of course, that's his, one of his heroes, man. That's what he had.
Well, that's one of Fripp's heroes too.
And he always played a telly, and he influenced so many things. Like, I don't know if there would be an Edge without Andy Summers.
Oh yeah,
That's what I was just going to, we've been raised in a culture of more, more, more. And you know, if you're not Eddie Van Halen, if you're not Slash, if you're not like the Angus Young, you got to be larger than life. And especially with guitar, everybody thinks the guitar, it has to be larger than life. But Andy really, he was about atmosphere. He was about mood, and he didn't need to blow you away with a solo, because he did what was best for the song. And that's what made the band what they were. And it's the same exact, it's so prevalent in trios. I think, look at, and like we've been talking about Alex, it's the same thing. He wasn't trying to steal the thunder from anybody. Look, what works best for the song.
I also think Charlie's point, if had there been no Police, I don't think Rush would have been quite like they were in the 80s when you get to Signals and Grace Under Pressure and Power Windows. I love that era of Rush, but it's so Police influenced, especially now that Charlie pointed that out.
That Walking on the Moon chord, you know, you hear that so much in those Rush songs.
It's the same chord as Are We the Last One Still Alive? Oh, with a little into the
thing. Pressure.
What is that? Yeah, that's Red Sector A. Bow, ow, 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 down, down, ow. It's the same chord. Yeah,
it's the Police.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
I've never, until you brought that up, because now I'm thinking, and it's like that earlier Rush was heavier. The earlier Rush had that little bit more of a metallic feel to it, and then they evolved. And by the time you get to why am I flaking on the album? Hold Your Fire. I was flaking on the album title. By the time you get to Hold Your Fire is kind of like Synchronicity. You know, it's not.
Started with Signals in 82, which is right when the Police were at their peak kind of thing too, right? So
yeah, yep. That's the most Police sounding for me, at least. That's when they really adapted to, wow, that sounds a lot like the Police.
I think that now that we've discovered this, in a few months, we should get together again and do another classic album clash for Regatta de Blanc versus Zenyatta Mondatta. That might be a good way to go.
Those two are hard.
Yeah, because those are really hard.
That'd be harder than that might be a better debate. So we hooked them with this one, and then we'll get even deeper, even nerdier if that's possible. For the second
three.
I'll have notes next time. This is top of my head. I'll have notes like Charlie.
Guys, thank you so much. This has been great. And let's do it. We'll do album 2 and 3 next time.
And can we call Sounds Stuart great. At the end of it and tell him what we voted?
I've got backup, Stuart. You did play a weird time in the campaign.
An intervention for him.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll love that. He'll come over with his glasses and his headband to beat the shit out of me.